Good afternoon. And welcome to all of you who are joining us on the internet as well. For those of you here as well as those of you on the internet, this is not a closed group, and you are welcome to and are invited to invite your friends who you think might be interested to participate, just because we're into the book doesn't mean that no one new can start. Okay. Well, let's go right into the book.
Prayer is a way of asking for something. It is the medium of miracles, but the only meaningful prayer is for forgiveness, because those who have been forgiven have everything. Once forgiveness has been accepted, prayer in the usual sense becomes utterly meaningless. The prayer for forgiveness is nothing more than a request that you may be able to recognize what you already have. In electing perception instead of knowledge, you place yourself in a position where you could resemble your father only by perceiving miraculously.
Note the word resemble. You placed yourself in a position where you could resemble your father. But the fact is that you're not here to resemble the father. You're here to be the Father expressed. Continue.
You have lost the knowledge that you yourself are a miracle of God. Creation is your source and your only real function.
That pretty well summarizes everything we've been talking about in terms of turning toward the altar. Forgiving means to give something for something. And in turning to the altar, you're saying, I'm willing to give my predisposition to interpret things the way I want to interpret them for your view, Father, for truth as you are being it. Because at the bottom line, all of you in some way feel guilty, and mind you, that feeling of discomfort is like the bell on the garbage truck when it's in reverse, saying this is a more dangerous circumstance than when I'm moving forward. It would seem to you that punishment would naturally be forthcoming for your disobedience, if you will. And so it's comforting and practical to suggest to you that you need to ask for forgiveness. That sets your mind in the right direction. But because of the polarized nature of your attitude when you're separate, it's easy for you to imagine that the Father will say, no, I won't forgive you. You have been too disobedient, and you deserve to suffer a little before I extend my forgiveness. And so it's necessary to go a step further and understand that forgiveness is really embodied in your willingness to abandon your perceptions and your confidences in the way things work. in favor of having the Father's view, the Father's perspective revealed to you, which naturally brings you back into your divine function of being the presence of God expressing Himself right where you are and claiming no right to a private and personal authority. I've said before that prayer is saying yes to God, not asking God for something, which is another way of saying prayer is yielding to God. And once you've yielded to God, prayer in the usual sense becomes utterly meaningless. In the last sentence there, creation is your source and your only real function. You simply aren't here to have a perception of what that is, an evaluation of what that is, an opinion about what that is. You see, everything is so much simpler than the way you've been doing it. Let's continue.
May I ask a question on that paragraph?
Yes, you may.
It's on the last sentence where it says, creation is my function. I'm still a little hazy on what that would be like, since I'm perceiving and trying to be ingenious and intellectual all the time.
Well, it means none of that.
I realize that, so that therefore I don't even have a feel for what it's, and since it's my only function, I think I ought to look into it.
That recognition is the dawning of wisdom. Yes.
It's a start.
Yes. First of all, it's an experience of perfect peace. Perfect peace is you experiencing no self-consciousness, you experiencing no fear, you experiencing no vulnerability, you not caring whether others have judgments of you, on you. And in that space, if I may put it that way, you find yourself being completely undefended. In being completely undefended, there is no inclination to assert yourself in any way. And it's like floating on your back in a river where no energy needs to be expended for survival or to achieve a goal. And when you find yourself floating in a river, you find nothing static about your life, because the current of the river is moving you and you are letting yourself be at one with it. In practical terms, that means that you will find yourself functioning, quote, in the world, unquote, busy, active, but not busy or active achieving personal goals, things you have made up to accomplish. And when that happens, you will find yourself, by virtue of having abandoned yourself to the movement of being, reflecting the Father's will, embodying the Father's will. And thus, everything you find yourself doing will have real meaning, with a capital M, that, for lack of better words, will glorify God, quote, in the world, unquote, embodying His purpose and blessing everyone. That's the beginning of the experience. And that's the nature of the experience. That's the end of the answer.
So that doesn't sound like the common, ordinary, run-of-the-mill definition of creating. You know, like we think of somebody who's a creative artist, or you know, gee, that person is really creative. Look what they did to their garden. But it sounds like what you're talking about is where you actually have no idea or ideas in your head that you claim to be, that come from thinking and planning. It's more like, oh, that's interesting. Look how that worked out. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen next. Well, I wonder how that's going to resolve itself. So it's kind of that internal dialogue as opposed to the ones that we're normally... Is that?
That's exactly correct. It's where everything that you do is inspired, not reasoned out. And as you say, it is only afterwards, when you look and see what has happened, that you will marvel at it. You will find yourself in the beginning saying often, man, I never would have thought of that. Or I would never have been that expansive. I would never have been that free in expressing what was expressed. And so you will find that creation has occurred, and it has not been separate from you in any way. But it will not have had anything to do with the thinker, the planner, the imaginer, the smartass, the the one who was inventive. And you know, it's when you let that happen and you see the perfection of what happens that you begin to realize how much energy you wasted, how much trepidation you experienced when you were trying to be ingenious yourself. And at the bottom line, you will experience the fact that there is a God and that nothing is up to you and nothing ever was up to you to do all by yourself. If you were to do this rather persistently, you might be surprised to find that it wasn't until well after the fact, it wasn't until some time, in quotes, had passed, that you realized that all of this happened in the absence of fear, that you were and had been experiencing utter peace. And then you will say, wow, what a difference from the way I used to do it and the way I used to feel and the debilitating effect of the undercurrent of anxiety. Peace doesn't come up and hit you in the face. But when you discover that you have been being for 6 months without fear, then you understand experientially what peace is and how wonderful it is, and that it really is your birthright. And this realization helps to devalue any inclination you have to continue to operate independently as an authorizer in your own right. Being part of the movement of creation by not behaving in any way separate from it causes you and the Creator to be indistinguishable. And you find your very being to itself be the movement of creation. An experience in which is pure satisfaction, even though it is utterly obvious to you that you haven't had one little speck of an idea of your own being implemented. This is why what I'm talking about is so unsatisfying and unappealing to the ego. You all get quite a hit from having your back to the altar and imagining that everything is there for you to deal with on your own and to define and to manipulate and to protect yourself against. So there's no way I can appeal to your egos in order to help you or get you to wake up, because that's the one thing you have to give for the Father's point of view. That's the one thing you have to give up in order to have a replacement of something meaningful. And there's the forgiveness. Okay.
Can I have a follow-up on
that? Yes.
How does intuition fit into this scheme? Because a lot of people will say, well, you know, I have a feeling, but so often it's a projection. You know, it's like when I was in Hawaii, I kept running into people who wanted to start a healing center. You know, every new person, I'm going to start a healing center. And after a year of listening to people talk about, I began to recognize that what they were looking for was healing for themselves. And then they would project it out there into the world. So many people have intuition or think that they have intuition. And I can't help but feel that intuition in some, it's like, you know, you do recognize that there's a lack, you know what I mean, in your life. There's something missing. So how does intuition fit in this?
I would put it this way. Intuition is inspiration not looked into deeply enough. Real intuition is an experience of knowing something true. And that is different from projection. And the word is used carelessly. But intuition is like the leading edge of the experience of inspiration. And instead of acting quickly on intuition, one should abide with it and go deeper into it. Into it. Into it more deeply. To intuit it more deeply. So that the fullness of the inspiration can flow into manifestation or embodiment. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello?
Yes.
Do you have a question from the internet?
Yes.
Amina, on the internet, I would like to know, is the process of creating art and music where there is no planning, and where it is just emerges from that inspiration, is a moment of God expressing?
Indeed. It is when one tries to be creative to order that it stops being inspiration. If someone says, "My living room is done in blues and greens, and I would like a painting that would harmonize with and complement the color scheme of my living room." That's when an artist ceases to be an artist, when he tries to be artistic to order, to fulfill a request. Because the movement of God considers nothing except the blossoming, forthcoming of love in utter originality. And nothing other than love is taken into consideration. I want to refine that a bit, because you can sit a monkey down at a piano, and the monkey will behave without plans, and what will emerge will not be beautiful or harmonious. And so thoughtless action is not the same as doing something without a personal plan. Let me put it this way. Inspiration is a movement that is allowed by you, by any one of you. And when it is allowed, that movement finds expression in form. And that is different from thoughtless, unplanned action. So just letting go and behaving randomly and without concern and ultimately without love will not result in art or beauty or that which blesses everyone. So, because of the tendency of much metaphysical and New Age thought in this present day, I need to make that distinction so that no one thinks I'm saying that if you just behave without plans, you will be doing God's will. It's not true. The only way you will be doing God's will is when you have turned toward God, desiring to know the truth, desiring to experience the movement of love, so that your every breath, your every movement reflects that into expression. Okay. Continue.
The statement, "God created man in his own image and likeness," needs reinterpretation. Image can be understood as thought, and likeness as of a like quality. God did create spirit in his own thought, and of a quality like to his own. There is nothing else.
I'm going to interrupt here. We spoke in the last few weeks about the fact that mind, God, moves. And the movement is a movement of ideas. And those ideas are perfectly recognizable to that which formed the ideas. And in their recognizability, they are visible and tangible, but not material. All of it is pure spirit. Continue.
Perception, on the other hand, is impossible without a belief in more and less. At every level, it involves selectivity. Perception is a continual process of accepting and rejecting, organizing and reorganizing, shifting and changing. Evaluation is an essential part of perception because judgments are necessary in order to select.
Yes. In order to perceive, in order to accept or reject, organize and reorganize, there has to be something separate from the movement of creation to observe it, and therefore be in a position to analyze it. And so, of course, one must have turned one's back from the altar in order to create the imaginary environment in which one could be an independent observer and then proceed to evaluate. Part of what is very dissatisfying to the ego in the process of awakening is that in yielding to the river, floating on your back, expending no energy whatsoever for survival or the achievement of goals, one has abandoned the so-called right to make evaluations. You can't even say, well, I'd like to be closer to the edge of the river, or I'd like to be in a quieter part of the river, or I'd like to be in a faster part of the river. One has arrived at a point of saying, thy will be done. I will fit in. Those are the terrible words. I will fit in. I yield to the movement of creation and hold myself separate from it no longer. And in doing that, abandoning this apparent right to be separate, you find yourself at one with it, and it being the wholeness of you. Mind spake and form appeared. That's a brief description of creation. Or mind speaks and form appears. But understand that this form is not matter. Mind speaks and recognizes itself in that act or action. And it's all mental. It's all mind. And the substance of the experience is spirit, not matter. Now, what I want to bring home at this moment is that nothing that you are experiencing right now is matter. Not the chairs you're sitting on, not the bodies that are sitting on the chairs, not the trees, nothing that you are experiencing is matter. And therefore, nothing that you are experiencing right now is bound by what you would call the laws of matter or physics. Form follows function. Mind spake and form appeared. Mind spake and function functioned and was recognizable and identifiable. The movement of God, of creation, is being. the verb, being. It is movement, it is function. If form follows function, it serves function. It renders function visible and tangible. Not materially tangible, but experienceable. With what? The only thing there is, mind. And that's what's going on right now for every single one of you. It's the only thing going on, period. What does this mean? This means that if a sprinkler head is jammed by a little piece of metal that is supposed to shift and it's not shifting, that the function of the idea, it seems that the function of the idea is blocked by a little piece of metal, matter. And if you think it is matter, you will stand there and grouse about having to get into the water while it's running to try to loosen it up, to get it to function. If you will realize in moments like that, that there is no material sprinkler head there, that it is an idea which someone allowed to register in his or her mind and render it visible, and if you will at the same time remember that form follows function, then you will realize that there's no material piece of metal that has the ability to do anything other than render visible the function of the sprinkler head, of the idea. And you can watch that sprinkler head begin to function properly because there is no matter there. The energy of spirit looked at when your back is to the altar, minus the Father's perspective, appears to be able to function or not function, to allow or to block. And this could apply to the veins in your body, the arteries, the flesh of the arteries themselves that seem perhaps to be able to change shape and begin to block the flow of blood. If you think it's matter, you're going to have to deal with it as matter. You're going to have to manipulate it. You're going to have to oppose its ability to do something that does not identify the function it has and the functions it allows. But the moment you are willing to challenge that and recognize, at least as an idea, that there's no matter to it and that what you see is simply the visibility of it, the movement of an idea which God is being at that moment, you then will release the visibility from your belief that it is immovable matter, and you will be able to recognize that spirit, the substance that is spirit, which is serving the function that God has set in place, can reconfigure, if you will, instantaneously, to identify the function that it's rendering visible and tangible as a conscious experience, not as matter. You really need to enjoy the opportunities you have daily for reassessing anything that you think of as matter and challenge it with the idea, if nothing less, that if it appears to be matter, it must be pure spirit. And pure spirit is unable to act on its own. It can only render visible and tangible the idea that God is expressing. This is very important. There is another aspect I will go into, and that is that when we speak of energy, like light from the sun, or energy like electricity, you cannot say that electricity is the energy of spirit. It is a modified experience of spirit, and it is a material experience of it. And the way you can know is that it has polarities. Spirit is not polarized. The energy of spirit, which is love, is purely single. It therefore does not have the capacity to kill. The energy of the sun, light, can seem to damage your skin. And after all of these centuries of everyone thriving under the sun, wearing no clothes whatsoever, now suddenly the sun can cause cancer. Interesting shift of belief. And everybody buys into it. This energy that can seem to cause cancer and damage things is not the energy of spirit. It's not the energy of love that is light. And you need to be clear on that. Whatever has polarities is something you are seeing independent of the Father. It is the way you are perceiving the only energy there is when your back is to the altar. And absolutely everything you see with your back to the altar will be polarized. And why will it be polarized? It will be polarized because you're attempting to do something impossible, and you're believing that you're succeeding at it. And so you are in error. And that error will be reflected in absolutely every part of creation that you're experiencing. It is like putting on a pair of polarized glasses. It doesn't change anything you're looking at, but it causes you to perceive everything different from what it is. So, again, I encourage you all to have fun consciously approaching everything that you run into with the remembrance that there's not a bit of matter there. And because there's not a bit of matter there, what you're seeing is incapable of operating at odds with the function which has brought forth, or the movement of creation that has brought forth, or the idea of God that spontaneously brings into manifestation the visibility and tangibility of the idea. And therefore, this so-called material universe isn't a material universe, and you cannot possibly be in bondage to it. Form, remember this, form follows function. Function, the movement of mind, elicits, without interruption, without delay, that which makes that movement recognizable. Visibility and tangibility. And the only thing the visibility and tangibility can do is identify the movement of creation, the movement and presence of God. Form never ends up being independent from that which it is identifying. And the definition of matter is something which is independent of its source, of its creation. A statue carved 200 years ago, you go and look at today, and experience as an object in its own right, and the one who carved it is irrelevant. You see? But that's not the nature of creation. That which authors all that is always authoring it. Creation is current, and creation in every single moment, being inseparable from its source, has only one thing it can do: render visible and tangible or experienceable that source now. Why am I harping on this? Because you need to become free of your bondage to what you think form is, so that a sprinkler head returns to its function immediately without repair, so that a heart straining at circulating the blood in your body can return instantly to identifying the idea of which it is the visibility and tangibility, the function that it is rendering visible, a function that is a current idea in the mind of God, and which is incapable of actually becoming embodied as something that has polarities, that something that can work or not work, that can work well or work poorly, that can, if it works well, allow you to survive, and if it works poorly, kill you. You see? And I want you to have fun with this. What a delightful thing to become free of the bondage you have been experiencing to matter, which is nothing more than spirit, an idea, a non-material presence. That you have chosen to look at with a peculiar bias. That then keeps you bound. This is part of your emerging freedom. This is part of waking up. Yes.
What I'm hearing you say today is, there's some light bulbs going off here, that there is,
I hope,
no,
they're going on.
You're right. It not just applies to our alive body, but this applies to inanimate objects too, because there is no such thing as an inanimate object.
There's no such thing as an object that isn't energy.
What you're saying, so that if we look at it, really look at it the way we're supposed to be looking at it, it's making itself new. Then that
Absolutely.
Allows for that. So there is no such thing as deterioration.
That is correct.
This is really something.
And that is part of the bondage that you all deserve to be free of, and which you won't be free of as long as you continue to say, that's matter.
I've gotten a glimpse of this because I remember I had a mechanical apparatus that I prayed would work, and it did.
Indeed.
So it wasn't mechanical. It was part of what we were saying today, is God's expression of the idea, which through love re-energized or remade itself new.
That's right. You see, when you look at a sprinkler head, you say, well, the spring is going to wear out sooner or later, and so you're bound. The minute you recognize, though, that that spring is an idea, a non-material idea. You know that ideas aren't material. In the recognition that it's an idea, and that what you see there is the visibility and tangibility of the idea, and that the visibility and tangibility of the idea can't, has no capacity to do anything other than identify the function of the idea, then you'll realize that the spring does not have to wear out, and in fact the spring can't wear out, and it can't become detached, and it can't do anything other than render visible and tangible the idea. The function, the movement of creation that embodies the idea. Amazing things will happen when you release everything from your definition of it as matter. Okay. Let's continue. Okay.
Just briefly, so this means a change perception is where the miracle is. That is what the miracle is all about, a change perception in a sprinkler head.
Exactly. No, not a change of perception in the sprinkler head, but in the observer of the sprinkler head. Yes, indeed.
This is overcoming death, in a sense, that these are all these definitions. We've created deterioration, we've created it all by our word.
Indeed. Planned obsolescence, it's called. If everything is going to be eternal, I tell you one thing. And if everything is going to have to be somewhere eternally, you will not fill the universe with junk anymore. And when something is made, it will be an ultimate thing that you will be happy with always, and not need to replace with something more stimulating than the last thing to keep you alive and happy with life. You see,
resurrecting everything is going to be more fun.
Uncovering everything that is real is going to be fun, and let's let it begin now.
Today.
Not a year from now, not a week from now. Go out of here today, or before you leave here today. Question everything you're looking at, because you think everything is material, whether it's the roses or the glass or the fabric that your pants is made of. You think it's matter, and you've been taught what matter is. Well, now it's time for re-education. It's time for redefinition. Does the glass have scratches in it? It appears to, but that is not part of the function or intent of the glass tabletop. So that cannot be the truth. And because it is not matter, and because the only thing it can do is identify its purpose or its function perfectly, and what you are experiencing as a piece of glass has no capacity to do otherwise, nor reason to do anything otherwise, you can expect to see the scratches disappear. And it doesn't matter if they don't disappear the first time you do this. Your habit of interpreting what that piece of glass is and how glass behaves is well seated. There's a deep groove in your mind. It's a habit. And I'm encouraging you to start breaking the habit. And the more you can look at a thing and say, that's not matter, that's spirit. And as you drive home and you see the street light, that's not matter, that's spirit. That's an idea. Well, you know that at some point it was an idea in somebody's mind who designs streetlights. Take it a step further and realize that if it exists at all, it's an idea in the mind of God, pure spirit. And that which the mind of God, which is the only mind there is universally, has formed, was like its source, pure idea, recognizable to the mind which formed it. And therefore, there's not a bit of matter to it. If you engage in this often during your day, it will begin, if not to create a new groove quickly, to weaken the resolve you have in your mind as far as your sureness that you know what everything is. And it will begin to undo the confidence that you have that it's all matter. None of it is matter. Yes.
Yesterday I took apart an old Volkswagen engine in hopes of fixing it quickly, only to find that just about every part inside that engine is junk. So I'm going to go home and stop working on it. I think I'm just going to sit with it and just let it lie there, and I'll continue to sit with it, probably knowing me, and it will probably continue to lie there scattered all over the table.
Well, you will find that a time will come when you'll have to go out and buy new parts because you just can't continue to have it spread out on the table. I'm telling you how to begin to break the habit. I'm not saying that you cannot have instantaneous healing of that engine.
I didn't mean to imply that. I'm just adding a bit of...
But I am adding a clarification here, because as you proceed to undo the dream you have created, you're still going to have to be practical and see that the human need is met until the transformation, the miracle, the sudden shift of perception occurs more spontaneously and more frequently. And you will thank your lucky stars that the idea is still valid, because you can go and find another part that is an expression of that same idea.
Exactly. I think that I have a better attitude.
Yes.
About the whole thing.
Indeed. Indeed.
And it's not so much an insurmountable chore to me right now.
Yes.
Having heard you.
Good.
Yes.
Because you should enjoy this process.
Exactly. That what kicked in my response to speak on the mic right now was over your statement. I want you to enjoy yourselves.
Yes.
You know, until letting go and letting what I've heard you say many times before, what is real in each and everything.
Yes.
Just simply be.
Indeed.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, we must continue.
What happens to perceptions if there are no judgments and nothing but perfect equality? Perception becomes impossible.
Stop right there. These two sentences should be written out and put on your refrigerator door. What happens to perceptions if there are no judgments and nothing but perfect equality? It's simple. Perception becomes impossible. To have a sense of the kingdom of heaven different from what it really is becomes impossible. You don't need to work to change anything back into something else. You see that? But if you abandon judgments, and in its wake there is nothing but perfect equality, perception becomes impossible. Continue.
Truth can only be known.
Period. Or truth only can be known. That's the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
All of it is equally true, and knowing any part of it is to know all of it. Only perception involves partial awareness. Partial knowledge is impossible. Knowledge transcends the law governing perception, because partial knowledge is impossible. It is all one and has no separate parts. You, who are really one with it, need but know yourself, and your knowledge is complete. To know God's miracle is to know Him.
And you are His miracle. Continue.
Can I ask a very brief question?
Yes.
So whenever we see a work of art or a piece of music and recognize the truth in it, at least to some extent the individuals involved in that, in their following their inspiration, had stopped seeing what they were working with as matter and saw it as spirit. Otherwise the truth and the value couldn't have being expressed there.
That is correct.
And then when you were describing seeing the sprinkler as whole, you're really talking about maybe what could be called extremely high form of art.
You could say that, yes. Indeed.
Forgiveness is the healing of the perception of separation. Correct perception of your brother is necessary because minds have chosen to see themselves as separate.
In other words, you start out, since it's a given that everyone has chosen to see himself as separate, it is essential to begin with correct perception, even though perception isn't ultimate. Correct perception of your brother is necessary because minds have chosen to see themselves as separate. Continue.
Spirit knows God completely. That is its miraculous power. The fact that each one has this power completely is a condition entirely alien to the world's thinking. The world believes that if anyone has everything, there is nothing left.
That's because they think everything is matter. Continue.
But God's miracles are as total as His thoughts, because they are His thoughts.
Indeed.
As long as perception lasts, prayer has a place. Since perception rests on lack, those who perceive have not totally accepted the atonement and given themselves over to truth.
Oh, there it is again. Given themselves over to truth. yielding to truth, abandoning self-made authority, imagined self-made authority. Oh, becoming a puppet of God. Oh. Since perception rests on lack, those who perceive have not totally accepted the atonement and given themselves over to truth. There's the forgiveness. How about giving yourself, giving your present sense, separated sense of yourself, over to God so that it might be replaced with the truth about you? That's the ultimate exchange, isn't it? That you would abandon your definition of yourself and all the rights you think it has and all the power and all the potential for success that you think it has, and giving it up for the Father's perspective about you. Giving it up for the purpose of glorifying God rather than yourself, for the purpose of letting God be all there is of you, because that's all there ever has been of you. Continue.
Perception is based on a separated state, so that anyone who perceives at all needs healing.
Yes. Anyone who perceives at all is in need of healing. Every single one of you are in need of healing. Does that make you awful? No. But hey, it means that there are glorious things for you to discover that you're missing out on. So forget about being down on yourself because you need healing, because you're in a state of ignorance. And let your curiosity lead you to the discovery of what's true about yourself. Let it lead you to the acknowledgement that the streetlight is all spirit, not matter. And therefore eternal. Continue.
Communion, not prayer, is the natural state of those who know.
And there is another way of describing what I spoke of as floating on your back on the river. Communion is being present with the movement without asserting any authority of your own that you imagine that you have. Communion is an innocent allowing of yourself to be present with and in no way separate from God. Continue.
God and His miracle are inseparable.
And again, remember that you have been described as His miracle. Continue.
How beautiful indeed are the thoughts of God who live in His light.
Oh, you're a thought of God. And how beautiful indeed are the thoughts of God who live in His light rather than in the darkness of your own imagined private authority and ability to succeed at overcoming the duality and the conflict that you've created by turning your back on the altar without having to turn your face toward the altar. Continue.
Your worth is beyond perception because it is beyond doubt. Do not perceive yourself in different lights. Know yourself in the one light where the miracle that is you is perfectly clear.
Wow, how inspiring. How wonderful. And you've all gotten the point. And I think you've gotten it without a sense of labor, and you will be able to leave today challenging the materiality of your world with delight rather than awful seriousness. I know I'm beginning to sound repetitious, but the for lack of better words, the energy of our communion together. And I'm not excluding anyone listening or joining us on the internet. The energy of our joining together is, I'm going to put it this way, less and less dense, and therefore, again for lack of better words, more and more enjoyable. And although it is impossible for me to feel bad, I can only convey to you what I need to convey to you by saying it really feels good to be with you in this way. And it has been a most pleasant experience. And I want to say thank you. And I look forward to being with you next week.